Blog Talk Radio.
They abandoned their belief in the supernatural. Now you are asking me to sabotage that achievement, to send them back into the dark ages of superstition and ignorance and fear? No!
You are listening to the Pink Atheist Podcast with your host, Rachel Johnson.
Hi there, everyone, and welcome to The Pink Atheist. I'm your host, Rachel Johnson, and here we are again. It is August the 6th, 2020, and today I am going to go over the health of America, a nation in crisis. I wanted to talk about this because it's a major thing, and real quickly, I do want to mention that the New York Attorney General, District Attorney, said that they are trying to disband the NRA. That is just breaking out now. She had a news conference about 20 minutes ago. Last week I did a show and I mentioned on it that the NRA had had their hands in Australia. And apparently this is part of a bigger ongoing investigation into the NRA, their funding and their board members, and what they have been doing in the background. Now, we know that they had ties to Russian oligarchs in the 2016 election. We know that a Russian spy was working with them. We're also aware that now they have their hands in Australia. And I said it last week, and it was important then, and it's important now. They're supposed to be a National Rifle Association. Their whole existence is supposed to be, quote-unquote, around Americans' gun rights, and they're continuing to have them, although it really hasn't been under attack. They promoted this. They then started NRA TV. They were, you know, they put out books and magazines and literature and things surrounding this. And as I said, at some point they spiraled out of control and were meddling not only in our electoral process, but meddling with Australia, which is a whole different country altogether, and their right-wing ideology and trying to fuel that. And I said it's a recipe for disaster, and now the New York AG has decided to take them to court and ask for the four people that are majorly involved to be removed, to be prevented from ever holding a position in a charity or tax-exempt organization again, and she wants restitution for the funds that they took. So we're going to see how that plays out here in the next few days and weeks and see what becomes of it, because this is a major thing, especially here in America, having dealt with our gun culture. And that does play into the health of America and part of our crisis. I think we have an overall situation here in America, and I'm going to get to that in a minute, but I do want to mention that currently Donald Trump was heading to my state, so they tested our governor, because our governor and lieutenant governor were going to meet with Trump, so they had to have a COVID test pre-meeting with him. And now it's so funny that they have access to instantaneous testing. Our governor did test positive. He's on his way back to the state capitol. And once there, he's going to retest and quarantine for 14 days. Now, I'm sure that a positive is a positive. However, we're going to wait and see how this plays out as well. Our lieutenant governor tested negative. However, if the governor's is a true positive and he's surrounded himself with the lieutenant governor, in a few days, that may not be the truth. So it's an ongoing thing as well. We're going to see how that plays out, because although he's been, our governor has been a big advocate for wearing the masks and stuff and being cautious, washing your hands, doing the right thing, the problem here is that everybody lives with the denial that it's going to be them that gets this. And ultimately, you make that one mistake. I know that Mike DeWine has interactions with a lot of other politicians and leaders and Republicans that come and go back and forth between Washington, D.C. and here. So it's going to be interesting. I know that we won't find out exactly how he got exposed to it, but I do know this, that John Husted will be meeting with President Trump in Ohio today, which I find very disturbing because Ohio is almost at 100,000 cases of COVID. We're having a little over 1,000 cases a day. Deaths were well into 3,300. So for us, it's had a longstanding impact. And I just don't feel that Trump has a right to show up here, and especially expose more Ohioans holding rallies or even meeting with people in companies where it's not secure for the people who he's gathering together. But we are a swing state, and we are in play. The numbers are kind of wavering back and forth here. And I think that that's one of his worries, is that he's going to not rally Ohio around him. And that's because we've lost the GM plant. Lots of farmers here have been impacted by his terrible import policy and his tariffs, especially soybean farmers. So, you know, Ohio is facing this impact. But again, this plays to the health of America. We are a nation in crisis because everywhere you look, we are hemorrhaging with problems. We have health care. We have millions of Americans not covered by health care. And we're in the midst of a pandemic, and these people are living in a situation where it's either too expensive or they've lost their jobs and they have no way to afford coverage, or they can't get covered by Medicaid. Now, Medicaid is based upon your last year's taxes. So if their last year's taxes say that they made $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, and if, you know, their family isn't big enough, they can't qualify for that yet. They're going to have to wait till next year to show their unemployment. And with unemployment having been given the extra $600, yes, it helps the people in their pockets now because it's helping them survive. But it's going to throw off a little of those numbers. And I want to see how our Senate and our House of Representatives deal with that, because it's going to make people who are currently unemployed but previously qualified for Medicaid because their income was so low, ineligible. And this is a problem. America has a major issue with drug costs, hospitalization and the cost there, PPE, the cost of COVID, the economy, unemployment, job loss, and it all ties in together with leadership and with the direction that our nation has been going, because this crisis is not new. Obama put into place affordable care, and it was a great thing, but it was only great to a certain point, okay? It had its limitations, and it had its problems, but it was a great step forward. What he said was it wasn't a finish, it was a beginning. And since Donald Trump took office, he has been trying to erode away at that, and even currently, in the midst of a pandemic, he's going to court to sue to try to take down the final tenets that the Affordable Health Care Act is standing on. And this is major because we're talking about hundreds of millions of people who are profoundly going to be affected by this. And Republicans have said for 4 years that they're putting together a plan moving forward to replace affordable care. But so far, we have not seen anything. There has been nothing from the side of the Republicans to show that they're working on anything. And what's most important there is now we have anywhere between 40 and 50 million Americans unemployed. They said another 1.16 million Americans filed for unemployment this week. We are a nation in crisis. And we need to talk about this because it's going to get worse. The problem becomes that only did we shut down for a month, approximately a month, and we only shut down 50%. So as compared to Europe, who shut down 89, 90% of their economy, we only shut down 50% of ours. And yet the damage is so profound here, and I'm going to explain why. The problem is that for too long, too many employers have been taking advantage of their employees. The income in America does not meet the needs of the average worker. And we talk about the middle class a lot, but there are less and less of those kind of jobs out there. And there are more and more of these kind of jobs that leave you at the cusp of possible middle class, but not quite there. And the tax burden is such that by the time that you're done with the tax burden, there's no hope of meeting that middle class in reality. We have the rich 1% who have benefited this entire time. And if you look at the NASDAQ is not the economy. Do not confuse the two. Because what is going on is the NASDAQ is how rich white people feel about the state of the country. And they can continue to feel good because they know that Donald Trump will prop them up. He will give them loans that they don't necessarily need or should be able to apply for. He gives them kickbacks, tax breaks. And this is a problem because these are the people who should be paying the most taxes. When they don't pay their taxes, it leaves a massive hole in our economy. And this is the real problem. Instead of him imposing more taxes on the rich people to incentivize the economy to stabilize, he instead turns around and gives them all of this money. They're not going to be paying it in taxes. They're going to find a way out of it. And what's going to happen is our deficit is going to grow, regardless of whether or not the HEROES Act or the Mitch McConnell grab bag for the rich, the HEALS Act, is passed. Our economy is going to see more debt. Rich people have to pay taxes. Those who have more should be paying more. That's just the principle of it. When you don't have that, you have a massive gap between the haves and the have-nots. And it grows. In any healthy economy, taxes their rich. It's just how it should be. And when Republicans cry, but we'll lose jobs. No, we won't. No. Rich people buy what's necessary for day-to-day life, but they find ways to get more of what they want for less and less expensive. I lived on a million-dollar ranch with some very well-to-do people, and I can tell you from personal experience and watching it happen around me, rich people take every advantage available to them to get ahead. It's just the way the game goes. It's not that poor people, you know, are lazy. It's that there's not as much available to poor people to take advantage of. There's always leverage when you have money. Money equals power equals leverage. So poor people who don't have money don't have leverage. You can't convince your senator to do what you want, mostly, unless they're a good senator like our Senator Sherrod Brown, out of just the kindness of their heart. They're motivated by personal gain as well. They have the power. They want more money. The best way to leverage them is rich people, them with money. Resources. Money in politics creates a problem. The health of our nation is in decline because people like the NRA have taken full advantage of all of the resources that are available to them and then some. They've gathered the money, then they've gathered the power, and they've gathered the leverage. For a couple decades, the NRA has had quite the power hold on this country. That's why mass shootings after mass shooting after mass shooting kept happening. That's why we couldn't get bans on weapons that civilians shouldn't have. That's why we had so many problems with the health of our nation. Because, you know, I was just discussing this morning. When people think that guns are a solution, they don't look at the real answers. And guns are not a solution. Always the solution to bringing a country upward is education. Okay? Those two things can open so many doors and change so many lives. guns only bring this sense of urgency to watch everything around you, to be cautious and to look at the world from a negative scope of everyone's out to get me. There's no problem with true gun ownership under the mentality that this is something I want to own. I will do my responsible duty to ensure that no one is harmed with this, and I will follow all laws and regulations. But that's not what the NRA was peddling. They were peddling the mentality that everyone is out to get you. Buy more guns, hoard more guns, because big government may come in and try to take them, or your neighbor or liberals might come and take them. And it speaks to the crisis of mental health in this nation, because people who are desperate for something, anything to make their life better, will unfortunately look sometimes in the wrong places, because if you don't have positive leadership and positive role models, people will look to anyone, including everyone. And it's easier to find negative role models who can use your own fear and panic against you. And looking at the health of America, it's easy. It's easy to get people scared. People are always afraid of the unknown. Maybe my neighbors are bad people. Maybe foreigners are bad people. Maybe another race is bad people. It's harder to look at them and then come to understand their humanity is true, that they're just regular people like you and I. It takes a more rational mind. And you have people like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Laura Schlesinger, all of the right-wing media out there peddling this hysteria. And so when people are fed a steady diet of hysteria, rational things don't get in. They close their mind like doors, and they hide behind what they think they know, which is often wrong. And let's face it, as human beings, we often believe things that are untrue. It's just the nature of the beast. When you're little, you believe in the tooth fairy, in Santa Claus. When you're a teenager, you believe that your life will be amazing and grand and you will change the world. When you're in your 20s, you believe that you can still do anything. And as you grow and learn, you understand that the more you understand, the less you really have understood and the less you do know. And so, unfortunately, they call it the Dunning-Kruger, where you try to validate your own thinking and then say, aha, see, I told you so. And many of us do that. All human beings are flawed in one way. But we have an economy right now that is negative 36.9%. We have drug costs that are phenomenal. We have hospitals that are still lacking in PPE, which is gear to help with the COVID. We have hospital charges and bills that are upwards of $100,000 for a person suffering with COVID. We have an economy that we are going to have to sit down at the table and work at forward. We cannot continue to have millions of people without health care. We cannot continue to have people so that they have one regular job and a side hustle, or two side hustles, or three side hustles. We can't expect the average worker to work two or three jobs just to have a place to live and food on the table. We can't keep looking to these same people who do this over and over again to Americans, who fail us over and over again, and expect different results. You know, Mitch McConnell is on Twitter today, and he is talking about Dems won't negotiate, they won't come across the table. He spent 2 months trying to get political appointees in office. 2 months. He had the HEROES Act on his desk. 2 months. And his priority was to load judges and political appointees for Trump so that he could make sure that he could sway the courts for at least the next 2 decades. This was his priority. not the health of the nation, not health care, not job loss, not unemployment, none of it mattered to him. And suddenly, when the time is up and the clock ticks to zero, and even then, we are a week out from everything being expired. And now he's talking about how Dems don't want to negotiate. They ran home 2 weeks in a row on Thursdays. They didn't even stay for a full week. They put together a haphazard plan that he can't even get half of his constituents, his colleagues to vote for. And it's not even a full package. This is like a greedy corporate grab bag for Donald Trump and friends with a little toss-in for the poor people there, and he wants the Democrats to sign off on it. So now when people are angry and calling his office and emailing him and telling him what they think of him, he wants to blame it on the Democrats. The HEROES Act has been sitting there for 2 months. It takes care of PPE. It takes care of the health care. It takes care of essential workers. It takes care of the unemployed. It takes care of schools. It takes care of children and SNAP benefits. It takes care of so much. But what you see here is the same old, same old. He wants to bow before Trump and corporate masters. Mitch McConnell has made himself rich while in office, which is totally unacceptable. So even if he loses election and he heads back to Kentucky this November, a loser, he's still going to be rich. His wife still has a job that she got because of the Trump administration. He is still going to get his pension, still going to have health care benefits for the rest of his life. He will probably land a job on some board where he'll make decisions for people like me and you and minorities across the nation as an old white man. And forgive me if that offends you, but it offends me that we have a majority of minorities dying from this, that women's health care has been backwards for so many decades. And knowing that a man like him sat in Washington for decades, for longer than I've been alive, Mitch McConnell has sat in Washington, D.C., and made the rules and regulations for women and minorities. He has stood up for corporations and their profits and their benefits for generations, longer than I've been alive. And now, some people say, well, that's why we should have term limits. Well, I'll tell you why I disagree. When you have someone like Nancy Pelosi, who has been the bedrock we have stood on throughout this 4 years, who has been the guardian at the gate, you suddenly stop believing that it's about term limits. It's about limiting the terms of people who go to Washington to become rich and never care about the poor people in this nation. Because a nation is only as strong as its weakest. And we are not strong. We're about to have hundreds of thousands of people evicted, which means that not only will they not have a home now, but as John Oliver said on This Week Tonight, it means that in the future, when they apply for housing, that will come up. So it not only profoundly affects them now, but it affects them moving forward because it's going to be harder for them to get a place to live. And a landlord doesn't care about why it was that you were evicted, that there was a national crisis, that there was a pandemic. What they see is that you didn't pay your rent and you were removed. And they think that I'm going to have that issue, so no, I won't rent to you. That is a hard thing for millions of people to swallow. There are so many things wrong in this nation. Like, if you have an eviction during this time, it should be mandated that it can't be put on your record. This is not the fault of Americans that a pandemic was mishandled by an entire administration. children shouldn't go to bed hungry in homeless shelters. This is not acceptable. The health of this nation is, it's terrible, and it's going to have long-term profound effects. If that unemployment benefit of $600 doesn't come back, here's what we can look forward to. People won't have money to spend. A lot of them won't have money for rent. We're going to be looking at more evictions, less spending. What's going to happen to the economy then? It's going to go into the toilet even further. Because people were buying things that they needed for a long time, wanted, but also they were buying their own groceries, taking care of themselves, getting caught up on things. And you might say, well, why didn't they get caught up on their rent? Well, because some states made it so difficult to apply for unemployment, they didn't get it. Some jobs have just terminated employees. Some people didn't have money when things first shut down so that they could pay bills. They had to wait a month and a half, 2 months to get unemployment. And even though they got some of that back, you have to understand the $600 was only retroactive to April the 1st. So if you were one of the people who in early March was out of a job, you didn't get all of that. You may have sat there for about 3 weeks with just whatever they gave you, which in Ohio, the base is $189. Imagine living on $189 a week. It's impossible. And so you had 3 weeks where that was all you got. So if you had another month that you sat there and waited for the unemployment to get ready, even though you got that, now you're behind on maybe a car payment, a rent payment, your utilities, your phone bill. And that's a mass of things to take care of. And if your rent is $1,200, $1,600, $2,000, that eats up a great proportion of that right away. Apparently, down in D.C., people like Mitch McConnell don't have a clue what people are paying in rent. Every place is different. And people from different economic strata are unemployed now. You know, they think that we all live in places where the rent is like $300, and quite frankly, maybe 20 years ago that was true, but today rents are $900. A house is, if you get a house in the middle of a really bad neighborhood, it's usually around $600. If you get an apartment, a small apartment in a decent neighborhood, it's $900. If you go further into the city away from where I am, rent there is downtown. Is about $1,500 to $2,500 a month. Some of those people down there are now unemployed. People everywhere are now unemployed. And that's just one thing. That doesn't include utilities, transportation costs, car payments. It doesn't include all of the things that Americans were spending money on. And the cost of groceries went up 38% from March to the end of April. 38%. Because it costs so much to get those supplies in here. So when you think about something like that, that level of a jump increase and the unemployment funding that was there, that takes a pretty big chunk. Because if you were already spending $400, $500, $600 to feed a family, because trust me, groceries cost money. If you want to eat a nice specific a healthy diet, you're spending at least per person $250 to $300 a month. And I know the government likes to think that if you have more than one child, it suddenly becomes cheaper. That's not the truth. You add a child, you add a mouth to feed, you add that exponentially to the pot. So it's not just easy. The problem here is a lot of our government, especially Republicans, have a 1950s mentality in a 2020 world. And it's devastating for our economy. Now, I like people like AOC. And I know that a lot of people who are Democrats don't really like her because she's a progressive. She's a Bernie Sanders kind of person. I do like her. I don't agree with everything she does. I definitely didn't agree with her criticisms of Hillary Clinton. But I will tell you this. She's a fighter. She's young. She has some new perspectives. She's really willing to put in the work for what she wants to see. And so we don't all have to agree on every detail. But I think that along the way, if we never bring in new people who have a new perspective and update our mentality, we become like what I'm talking about in people like Mitch McConnell. You have to have people push you towards new horizons. As a country, as a government, we have to have new ideas, new perspectives. It won't always be easy. Sometimes we won't like what we see, but ultimately it's important because a nation thrives when it listens to what is coming up. I mean, technology is changing, computers are changing everything, and I know that here in the next 20 years, automation is going to be taking a lot of jobs, and we're still going to have a lot of Americans in a lot of bad predicaments because we're going to be automating a lot of jobs and taking them over. And now this gives opportunity for people who, you know, learn how to work on machinery and do the mechanics of automation, and it's great in some regard. I have respect for it. Like they said, when new technology comes up, you think, well, we're going to be taking away jobs, but it creates more jobs. True, but we can't let it slip into becoming nothing but side gig industry where no one has a real job, real security, insurance, especially health insurance, and they just side all day and night. We cannot do that to another generation. Side gigs sound good on the surface, but ultimately underneath, there is a cost. There is an outlining cost. What do we want for the future of this country? Do we want a nation where people are secure? They know they have health care. They know that they can afford a home. They know that they can afford a car. They know that tomorrow they're still going to have their position. Or do we want a generation of people working 2-3 jobs, side gigs, to try to survive in an economy that is volatile, where health insurance is still a question, and a question mark, where people avoid going to the doctor because they don't have the money? We cannot have a country full of haves and have-nots in such disparity that many, many Americans are working as much as they can and still have to be on food stamps. It's ridiculous. And now is our time where we decide, America. What do we want? Not our parents, but their parents fought for a new way of doing things. Unions became not just an idea, but a founding principle. And when unions flourished, suddenly the bargaining power was in the people's hands as well. Now, over time, what happened was what usually happens when you don't have people guarding at the door. Unions corrupted. They suddenly started giving in to businesses. Businesses started sending jobs overseas, and suddenly, here we are today. Republicans demolished many, many, many of the unions, and we were left with, what do we do? And so now we have my generation who is faced with a lot of these side gigs, and we cannot keep doing that. We have to ask ourselves, in a principled manner, what we want moving forward. Healthcare costs in America are enormous, more than a person should have to afford. when they had lifetime caps on them, people were dying of cancer because they couldn't afford to finish their treatment. Or they had cancer and they were filing bankruptcy afterwards because they couldn't afford to pay for what it costs to have cancer. This shouldn't be the way it is. Obama tried to step up and give us affordable care, but we needed to move forward. We needed to add more people. We needed to get more people insured to help keep premiums down, keep health insurance up, keep the good plans alive, and let the bad ones diminish. But Republicans ate away at that. November isn't just about Trump. It is about everyone sitting in Washington, D.C., and what does it mean to have them there? If they're a Dem, but they're not doing their job for you, and they're doing their job for a corporate entity, and they're looking out for big money, ask yourself if you need them. If they're a Republican, and you know that they're looking out for corporate money, ask yourself why they're there. If not for leadership, why are they in Washington? If they don't want better for the people, why are they in Washington? If it's just about themselves and their ability to make friends, make money, and get rich, they shouldn't be in Washington. We deserve better as a nation. Every nation deserves better. This is an every nation thing because it's not limited to the scope of America. This is what happens in every country when leadership is corrupted. You see the economy start to become so rancidly volatile. You see things like high levels of poverty, low levels of education, high numbers of unemployment. You see things like this. And this is an example of why leadership is so important. Anybody can be a boss, but not everybody can be a leader. Anyone can tell you what to do. And I have an anecdote, a personal anecdote, and I want to tell it to you real quickly, and then I'm going to get back to this topic. But it has to do with leadership. I was working at Kent State, and I was one of the managers. And there was a young girl there. She wasn't too young, and I'll get to the specifics of that in a second. But she worked with me on the weekends, and I had noticed that whenever I asked her to do something, she would have a problem with my asking her to do it. And I was like, okay, well, whatever. At least she got it done, even though she would have, like, could you help me? And I can't do it, and rationale. And so I was like, okay, well, whatever. So my boss comes to me and he says, well, you know, she talked to one of the other bosses and I. She just came in and said she wants to be promoted to manager. And I looked at my boss and I said, don't you dare. Don't you dare. And he was like, why? And he told me, he said he wasn't going to, but he wanted to know why. And I said, because every time you ask her to do something, she doesn't want to. And I had been talking to the other students, and they told me that whenever I wasn't there, she would boss them around. That, you know, she didn't want to actually be the one doing the things, but wanted to be the one bossing. So I was like, okay, well, you know what, I'm going to have a talk with her. So I take her to the side, and I'm like, okay, well, we need to have a talk. And I told her, I said, you know, you're a very good worker, and, you know, I'm glad for what you do around here. And I said, but, you know, some of the other people around here have complained that you're, you know, telling them what to do. And she says to me, well, I'm 28, and I've been a leader before. And so I should be a manager. And I looked at her like she had 10 heads. And I was like, you seriously think that just because you had previous experience or that you're age older than other people around you, that this entitles you to a position? And, you know, she got mad at me because I said that I didn't think that she was right for that position at that time. And so she went to my boss and she told him that I was mean to her and how angry she was and how deserving of this position she was. And I laughed and I said that, you know, I should have recorded the conversation or brought somebody down because I kind of knew this. The problem is that there are people in this world who, for all the wrong reasons, they want to be in control. And they see it more about themselves and what I gain than what I give by my leadership. Somebody who cares makes it about teamwork. We get this done together. We all pitch in. We do our part. We get it done. We're better for it. That's leadership. She just wanted to boss people around and be able to do nothing. And when you have those people, look at the difference in what you're seeing. Why do you want to lead? What is gained by this? And words are cheap. Watch their actions, because the person will say to you anything in the world to try to lure you in to believe them. They will promise you everything in the moon and the stars, but it's not true. What do they do? Do they help people? Are they kind? Are they generous? I have a senator, Senator Sherrod Brown, who I mentioned earlier. I also follow his wife on Twitter. And a few weeks ago, she had posted a picture of him at home with her, just in regular clothing, you know, hanging out around the house, playing Scrabble with her. And I thought to myself, he's really an average guy. Like, at the end of the day, he's really just this genuine, caring, kind person who's at home playing Scrabble, social distancing, quarantining like the rest of us, being a good guy. And I thought, wow. And it made me more proud of him. You see, leadership comes with responsibilities. You need to show people that you're a person of your word and your actions. You need to do the right thing by not just yourself, but other people. And when you look at these Republicans and what's going on, that's not there for them. America can't be healthy as long as we have toxic leadership. And I know a lot of people fall for it, because here comes the election year. Here comes the promises. I'll get you everything you want. I'll make it better. I'll make the other guys go away. If we're in charge, we're the winners. We make the rules. The rules will benefit us. But will they really? And I know that the people who need to hear this the most are probably the people who will hear this the least. But I have hope for America. I really do. I want to see us make it to a day where sensibility and rationality rule, where we can make sure that everyone has health care, where we can make sure that poverty isn't the standard for living, where we don't need food stamps after working full-time at a job. Those are not so much to ask. That's the basic bare minimums of a good life. Capitalism is for the rich, it has been said, and I agree, because when you're rich, you can go after your dreams, and it can be a dog-eat-dog world. You can lose a little, but still never lose everything you own. But when you're poor, every day is a gamble. Every day is, will I get sick today? Will I lose my job today? Will I be okay by the end of the week? Will I make my rent? Will I pay my bills? Will I have food on the table? Countries that have more social stability, like universal health care, universal welfare, social nets in place to help their people, are more happy, more stable, more secure, less criminally driven. In America, capitalism isn't working. And people say, well, you just want socialism. There is a healthy mix there. First of all, you can compete with a new idea in an arena, which will make you rich. And that's a great thing to me. It's not such a bad thing. But I don't believe that at the end of the day, it's okay for a family to starve or live on the street or not know where their next meal is coming from. that should be the base value for everyone, that no family is faced with this. And it should be worldwide. But how can we set the example for the rest of the world if we can't even make the example happen here at home? How do we have the right to lead anyone when the path that we're going down is so wrong? It seems kind of hypocritical. If we have millions of people unemployed and won't take care of them, we can't tell another country, hey, you need to take care of your unemployed. If we have so many people out of houses and devastated by a plague that is killing people, and we're now at 162,000 deaths, we can't look to the world and say, you know, clean up your COVID crisis and take care of your people and be good leadership, because we're not being good leadership. And I take that upon my back, and I put it upon yours too. We should be an example, a shining light. And we have not been. And I think that all of the turmoil that was literally shallowly hidden in this country is now out there for the light to see. Is this what you want? You hear people grumbling and complaining, but really, what are we going to do to fix this? How do we get together as Americans and say, this is enough, we are done, let's move forward? When do we get together and unite our bargaining power? Because as long as American workers are willing to put up with the minimum given to them, they're willing to settle for second best or at best being worst. As long as you're willing to settle, people will give you the minimum that they can give you. No one will worry about your bottom line except for you. So if you want a better bottom line, you're going to have to stand up and fight for it. That's what Black Lives Matters is all about. They want a better bottom line. They're willing to stand up and fight for it. Are we, as a nation, ready to do that? Or do we need to continue another generation forward where our children see that, again, they have no job security, they have no universal health care, they have no stability socially, they have to live below poverty? Do we want to go another 10, 20, 30 years and have to have this debate again when the economy collapses? Because I was alive for George Bush doing this to America. I was alive for that economic collapse. All it took was one day to collapse this economy, and that should not be the ticket. We could have a surplus of money sitting there in the IRS, in the bank pot, that is ready to go to help Americans in crisis if we tax the rich properly. Imagine that this country was different than it is. Imagine that we had surplus money in Washington, D.C. sitting there. And in the event of a crisis, we could say, everyone is getting $2,000 a month, boom, here it is, and not break the bank. And not worry about the national deficit. Imagine if you knew that your health insurance didn't lapse because you lost your job in a pandemic, but you knew that you could keep your health care indefinitely because a universal plan existed which took care of you and your family. How much would that lift worries off of your head and everyone you know? What if we had a plan that was in place that if you lost your job, the government would come in and help pay your rent or mortgage for a period of 6 to 9 months to help you get back on your feet, not just unemployment, but help you pay the bills? How wonderful would that be? And, you know, anybody who wants to say to you, well, that'll just make people lazy, I would like to point to other countries where this is indeed the fact, where people are given money to live on, money for food, and everything else to meet their necessities. And guess what? They have very low unemployment, and they have more job satisfaction. And the reason that they have that is because they know at the end of the day, people want to work. What are you going to do if you sit at home all day, every day, for the rest of your life? It becomes quite boring. I think America's figured that out after 1 month. We all know nobody really enjoys sitting at home doing nothing, having nothing to do. It's just not a thrill. It's something that we Americans are doing out of duty to our fellow Americans to ensure the health and well-being of them survive. But it's not fun. Having a job is something to do. It feels like an accomplishment. And especially when you're doing what you love or enjoy, you go out there and you're happy to do it. You're happy to make that money. You come home, you know, weekly, you feel good about yourself. It helps your self-esteem. It helps your pride. All of that. It makes you feel like a good person. This is not a situation that normally anyone would want. So when Republicans say things like, well, they're just being money they're just being lazy because they want all this money because they're making more money now. No, I'd like to know that I can go out there and work and make more money. It's simple. People have the will to thrive, but you can't thrive in what doesn't exist. And you can't thrive if going out there means that you're going to die. There is a time and a place for everything. This is neither the time nor the place. As Nancy Pelosi said today, she was interviewed by one, I don't know who he was, but she said, obviously you've mistaken them for somebody who gives a damn. They don't care about American workers, but they should. Because without us, what did we see in less than a month? Without American workers at work, this economy disappears. It absolutely crumbles. You can't get meat to the store. You can't get pop to the store. You can't get toilet paper to the store. You have no Lysol. You have all of the supply decay really quickly when those same people that you accuse of being lazy don't go to work. And it's time that people benefited from who they are as a very essential individual. Every American worker is an essential worker. Everyone that goes out there and works hard day to day. This country is run on essential employees, and they deserve the respect for the job that they're doing. No one should ever be told that you're lesser than, and nobody should ever be paid a price that doesn't value the hard work that they put in and dedication. The health of this nation relies upon that, and it's time as Americans that we got this in our head. And we put this forward that we're not going to continue to make billionaires horribly richer while we are at the point of bankruptcy. And you have people like Jeff Bezos, who, if this continues, if his exponential growth in Amazon continues, will be a trillionaire. He will be the first trillionaire. Why is one man worth so much, so many, and yet he pays no taxes, and so many Americans are suffering? He could literally give away billions of dollars at this point. He could walk into Washington, D.C. and say, I'll lay $15 billion down right here today, and you help Americans with it. He's that level of rich. It would not hurt him. He's going towards becoming a trillionaire. And meanwhile, many people don't have money in their bank account at all. This should not be the way that this country is run. Because Jeff Bezos doesn't get up every morning and go to a hard job and work 8, 10, 12 hours a day like he makes his employees. He doesn't stand on his feet all day in a factory with a machine counting every time he stops. No. He gets to enjoy his days and nights in luxury simply for an ideal that he had that he kind of took from eBay, Then he used people who brought their goods, their original ideas to him. He mimicked a lot of them and made things identical to them and sold them, and now he has consolidated all of this. And he is a prime example of what I'm talking about. Jeff Bezos makes America unhealthy. He's not paying his taxes. he's not helping the average worker really thrive. He's making it so that Americans are dependent upon his goods so that they don't shop other places, which is damaging little mom-and-pop stores. It's damaging independent ideas. He's consuming them all. And when another app or idea does come forward, he buys it up, him and Zuckerberg, and they shut them down. America is not a healthy place, and we're not going to be healthy until we get rid of these toxic ideas of what it is to be rich in America. You don't get ahead in this country by being the good guy. That's not the rule. You get ahead in this country by getting the money, the power, the leverage, and then leveraging more so that you get all of the tax breaks, pay none of the taxes, and make your employees do it. It's absurd. In the last quarter, from March to July, to the end of July, Jeff Bezos made $13 billion. $13 billion. And you have to ask yourself, don't you think he could pay taxes? If we charged him $1 billion, let's say we got real good and we charged him $3 billion for taxes on that 13 in profit that he made. $13 billion in profit he posted. Okay? So we charge him $3 million. He still has $10 billion left to deal with. And if you're trying to tell me can't get by on $10 billion, then there's something wrong with this nation altogether. If every billionaire paid their taxes like they should, this economy would be super healthy and Americans would be living better lives. Well, that's going to do it for our show today. I hope that Americans get together unitedly and think about this, because we have to change direction. Until tomorrow, I hope that you guys have a great afternoon and take care of each other. If you want to donate to the show, I'm listed as the Pink Atheist on Patreon. I am on Facebook as Rachel Johnson. I'm on Twitter as Rachel Osiris. Glad if you follow me. Do your part. Fight for America. Don't forget there's a bigger picture and we have to think about it, okay? Till then, take care of yourself and each other.
They abandoned their belief in the supernatural. Now you are asking me to sabotage that achievement, to send them back into the dark ages of superstition and ignorance and fear? No!
You are listening to the Pink Atheist Podcast with your host,